Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
Thank you for tuning in to Catskill Cabin Conversations that will be aired on the third Wednesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today on the show, we have Pam Slater. Pam grew up in Cairo, New York. She attended Houghton College in Western New York and graduated from Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota, with a major in church music with a concentration in the organ. Pam played at Christ Presbyterian in Catskill for 12 years and has been playing at the Resurrection Lutheran Church in Cairo. She worked at Great American in Cairo for years and has two children. Some of her hobbies include reading, sewing, needlework. Pam, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hey there, Pam. Thank you for coming.
You're welcome.
So how's your winter been going so far?
Cold.
Absolutely. Some crazy sub-zero temperatures we've been having, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Any plans to stay warm or just staying inside?
Stay inside.
Okay. Needleworking.
And reading.
And reading.
And playing.
And playing.
Oh, excellent. And, well, you know, speaking of playing, Pam, I think we're going to get started here and talk about some of the songs and items you'd like to bring with you to your cabin in the Catskills. This particular song, I think our listeners are going to be very, very familiar with. It's the Canadian Brass's rendition of Thus Spoke Zarathustra by Richard Strauss.
Yes.
Okay, so why don't we hear it?
Yes.
That again was Thus Spoke Zarathustra by Richard Strauss, famous piece, I think made famous especially recently modern times by 2001 A Space Odyssey, Stanley Kubrick's film. Have you guys seen that?
I've not seen it, but I knew that was...
I have.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
My husband and I went to see it and we came out going, what was that all about?
You know, I only have seen part of it. I think I streamed some of it through Netflix or something, and I don't think I gave it enough of a chance. It just had seemingly kind of a slow start. I knew there was some sort of computer that was taking over a spaceship, and it was this kind of futuristic society. And
but it's such a powerful and emotive piece of music. You know, it's well known to, you know, all and sundry. You know, it's just a fantastic piece. And you know, if you read out the name of the song and the artist, to most people they would be like, never heard of it. Play the song, everybody's heard of it.
Oh, absolutely. And it's really interesting, and it kind of defines that era of music. It's the late 19th, early 20th century German music, Strauss and Wagner, these composers that made emotional and powerful and proud music. I think it really fits with that. Wagner did Flight of the Valkyrie, that bum 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 bum.
Yep.
Kind of in line with that.
This was actually written for orchestra, but this is an arrangement of it for brass quintet.
That's right. And again, you know, this was the Canadian Brass. The Canadian Brass was founded by Charles, I'm sorry, how's that, Andy?
What?
Charles?
Dellenbach.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. That was excellent. And the two, on tuba, and then trombone player Gene Watts in 1970. They've recorded over 100 CDs, DVDs. There are always five members, but over time they've changed it up, and They've appeared on The Tonight Show, The Today Show, Entertainment Tonight.
The Afternoon Show, yeah. The Morning Show.
they actually, we came and saw them in person up at Proctor's years ago.
Really? Yeah. How was it?
Oh, incredible.
Yeah.
Make the hairs on your neck stand on end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're quite the show people.
And guys in tuxedos with sneakers on. What is it about them that makes it for such a great show?
They don't just stand up there and play. They proceed in. They do some strange things to. They're just show people.
Oh, okay. And I
but
have
they're heard, really cool musicians too.
Oh, absolutely. And I've heard they've done renditions. They'll kind of jazz up a classical piece, you know, like a Bach or a Mozart, and give it a jazzy,
kind of.
And they've also done They've actually done a lot of arrangements for brass quintet, which mm-hmm. actually we have some at church. The Hallelujah Chorus that we usually play every Easter is one of their arrangements.
Canadian generally. Brass, yep. No kidding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I grew up listening to their Christmas album. Mm-hmm. I've always mm-hmm. really, really enjoyed that. And,
Christmas is over, Mike.
Not in my heart.
Get
Andy.
Over it, Mike.
Only by a couple of days.
Get over it, boys and girls. It's Christmas is over. Santa is away.
Thanks, Mr. Scrooge.
Now, can I just ask, Pam? Now, you're taking that song to the Catskill and the cabins, your Catskill cabin, sorry. Now, is this a song that you're going to wake up to every morning? You know, you get out of bed. Dun, dun, dun.
It could be, or it could be when my husband's in trouble. I could.
Oh, no, he's been chased by a bear.
You have chosen poorly. Yeah, and actually, in the it's based on Nietzsche's work, Thus Spoke Zarathustra, and the meaning is about sunrise. It's that particular part of...
It sounds like sunrise.
Yeah, Nietzsche's work.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, you can visualize the sun coming up or the birth of something when you hear that music, mm-hmm. you know?
So Nietzsche, you know, this philosopher was coming up with all this new philosophy on morality and humanity, and he came up with, you know, the Ubermensch, the Superman, and he thought that mm-hmm. people would evolve into this new kind of archetype and this... We would do away with God and take on our own type of self-ordained morality.
And at that time when people were talking about, you know, whether God exists or not, you know, it's a very, very dangerous thing to be talking about, you know, in those times because, you know, you could be brought up in charges of blasphemy and stuff like that.
Well, Darwin had, you know, published on The Origin of Species and that was gaining momentum. And, 30, 40 years later, we had the Scopes trial in Tennessee, and so it was something absolutely that people were grappling with, and I think still today, mm-hmm. To a large degree. So, excellent choice there, Pam. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
The next thing you're taking to the Cabin of the Catskills is needlework.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've been doing needlework for tons and tons of years, and it takes me forever to do anything, and I've got a particularly nice counted cross stitch that I like to drag with me. It's been all over the country because that's how slow I work on it. And I just take it out and work really slowly and just it's very relaxing.
You know, I really admire people who do that. My mum has been knitting for decades and she knits clothes for babies and stuff like that. And it takes a real calm person to actually be able to sit and do this. You know, I think I would go off my rocker if I was to sit and try and knit or crochet or do needlework because it's just so tedious for me. But for some people, it's very calming. Is it calming for you?
This particular stuff is. I used to do knitting, but I would be so intense about it to get things done that it actually kind of played havoc with my shoulder and my arm and stuff. So I don't do much knitting anymore, even though I like to do it. Right. But the needlework... The holes are so small, you have to take your time because I can't see them very well otherwise. But
how often do you stab your fingers?
Occasionally.
Yeah.
Now, forgive me for my ignorance here, but I really don't know what needlework is. I think I kind of know what crocheting is, but I don't
know. It involves
much about this.
A needle and work.
Yeah. Well, there's different things. I mean, this particular thing that I'm working on is called counted cross stitch, and they give you this page that's got all these little symbols in boxes, and the symbols match a color of thread. And then you have to go to this piece of cloth that has all these little holes punched in it and count out holes and make little cross stitches.
Yeah.
And it's pretty, it can be very tedious, but it's kind of mindless, calm.
Well, you know, I used to be a stand-up comedian in Scotland, and I used to do gigs in Glasgow in the Stand Comedy Club, and there was a woman who was a compere, and she was a fine, oh, she still is a fine comedian, and she used to sit in the back every Friday and Saturday night amongst all of the, you know, the comedians' egos and stuff, and she used to sit and do needlework in between, and I was like, that's remarkable.
Yeah.
You know,
if you do the knitting and stuff, you really don't even have to. You can do other things, watch TV and stuff, because you do it by feel. I said, but I can't. The knitting bothers me, so I don't.
Yeah, because I watch my mum, and sometimes I look at her in awe because she's watching the television, drinking a cup of tea, and knitting. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how do you do that?
Yeah, and what kind of stuff do you knit, Pam?
Well, I haven't in a long time because it bothers me. But I
the needlework.
Oh, the needlework is they're just pictures.
Oh, okay.
Well, so you actually create pictures with your needlework?
Yeah, except they're a pre-printed thing.
Right. I was wondering, like, so you're taking other designs. You're not having to plan out the whole thing.
No. You could, but I'm not that talented. I just like to take the picture and go, okay, it's, you know.
Just gonna do that. Yeah. Oh, that's really really fascinating. And how did you get into needlework?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, back when I was in college. Back when I was a kid, I guess my mother taught me to knit and crochet, and then when I was in college, I got into knitting and crocheting big time, and made a bunch of sweaters for different people and myself, and then.
Do you still have any?
Yeah.
Yeah. You should have brought one with you.
I almost did, but I didn't.
See, this is the point where you lie and say, "Oh, I made this one. I'm wearing in 72."
Yeah, no, I made one in 75. I made my husband. A Nordic sweater back in 77, the first year we were married, and I haven't really done much of it since, again, because it really bothers. I've had problems with my arms. Since
carpal tunnel and stuff like that?
Well, it's not carpal tunnel. I don't know what it is, but it's...
Yeah, just...
It tightens up and doesn't want to let go. So.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
Years of, you know...
Overuse,
pipe organ
basically,
and piano and...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever seen needlework that you were especially... impressed by or an artist that you were really blown away by?
I don't know if I could say an artist. Right now, my latest thing is into sewing and quilting, and I just am in awe of what some people do with their quilts. It's just absolutely amazing, especially people that take and design like free art type things. Can't give you a name of anybody, but...
Oh, that's okay. That's really fascinating. And another song that you want to take, Pam, is the Concerto for Two Trumpets by Vivaldi, which we're going to check out right now. Thank you. That again was Vivaldi's Concerto for Two Trumpets. Pam, why that song?
Because I like the way it sounds.
Yeah.
And I like
moving on.
Yeah, by Antonio Vivaldi. He was an Italian Baroque composer, a Catholic priest, virtuoso violinist born in Venice, late 1600s. He's best known for his Four Seasons concertos.
Pam, what does the song mean to you?
Again, I like the sound of it. I mean, putting Vivaldi in other perspective, we have done his Gloria at choir at church. I think it might have been before your time, Mike, but we've done it a couple different times, and it's just a fabulous piece of music. He did some nice choral
right.
stuff as well. And again, like Mike said, the Four Seasons are really his most famous pieces.
I mean, this is music I'm familiar with in terms of listening to it. In terms of the history of it, mm-hmm. the artists, etc., the composers, I'm not really that knowledgeable, admittedly. And yeah. and this is a good learning session for me, so I'm really enjoying listening
When I choose the music, it's something kind of elevates me to a different level. It's like I don't look at it intellectually and go, well, I like this because blah blah blah. It's because it lifts me. Yes,
yeah.
It's an emotional, almost spiritual sometimes.
I mean, I was looking up the word Baroque and what it meant, and it was basically saying that the music was written and composed with energy and vigor and, you know, vitality. And it certainly does live up to that. It is a very refreshing song or piece of music, rather.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. One thing that fascinates me about music is the technical side. And I've never gotten to really learn that, but I read about music and, you know, the harmonies that people use and the minor and major chords and these things. And there's a style to writing music and composition. To me, music is more just the emotional side and feeling it rather than the mathematical and technical arrangement of music. I know Philip Glass is a composer who has a particular style, technical style, and someday I'd like to learn that. I don't know if I have the intellectual capacity, but,
Yeah, we're kind of pushing it there, I think.
Yeah. It sounds good.
It is cool. It's really cool.
Yeah. And now to finish up with our Canadian brass, the third song that you'd like to bring is Toccata and Fugue by Bach, published by Mendelssohn in 1833.
Thank you.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 Catskill Cabin Conversations. That was Canadian Brass, Toccata and Fugue by Bach. Pam, can you talk a little bit about that song, please?
Okay. Well, actually, to most organists, it was probably blasphemous that I chose a Canadian Brass version of it, because it's actually an organ piece, one that I've played many times, and it's probably almost the most famous piece that Bach wrote because everyone has heard it somewhere. They associate it with Phantom of the Opera or whatever. But anyhow, it's again, a really one of Bach's most famous pieces, and it's enjoyable to listen to. I kind of enjoy listening to the brass versions of it because of all the technical stuff that they have to do to accomplish what I can do very simply playing a scale on the keyboard. So
sure. Yeah. Now, you were mentioning where we were listening to the song, something about particular, was it, now you can correct me if I'm saying the wrong thing, certain notes or certain keys couldn't be played.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say there's a whole bunch of voice leading and tonal rules as far as like what you can and can't do in contrapuntal music, and back in those days, writing an augmented fourth or diminished fifth, which is like playing a C and an F sharp together, was considered, it's called the tritone, it was considered evil, the devil's music, and it's also difficult to sing, so probably maybe that's why they decided that it was that, but...
So an augmented fourth and a diminished fifth, what that is you basically choose a note on the piano and count up four half steps or five half steps and then play that next note, and that's basically the two notes played together.
Yeah, I haven't sat down and actually thought about it in a long time exactly how many half steps and whole steps it is.
Sure.
But yeah.
So if you play these two notes together, it's bad.
Yeah.
That's basically what
so during
saying.
That time, during that time, you know, the news would have been... good evening. A man was arrested today for playing these two notes at the same time.
That's right,
it was a mistake.
Of course, now it sounds like a train whistle, so I don't know why they don't arrest those people. But
and that's why they, put them on trains, because it's so terrifying, and it helps to scare away animals, and you know, because of the evil nature.
Could be.
I think that's got to be it.
And, absolutely.
And also the song's found in Disney's Fantasia, 1940.
Oh, yes,
it is, yes.
The 1934 horror movie The Black Cat, with villain Boris Karloff playing it on the organ. And then the next year, Bela Lugosi playing it in The Raven on an organ. Tales from the Crypt in 1972. So it's easy to associate this song with vampires and castles and Halloween.
Rollerball.
It was in Rollerball. That's, you know, I've never seen that movie.
James Caan.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, though, it's not one of Bach's, one of his most well-known pieces, but it's probably not his best work. It was written when he was a more immature Bach. His later pieces have much more solidity to them and are actually better pieces of music.
You know, I first listened to the whole piece, I had it on a CD in college, and up until I had it on in this album, I only really ever heard the first part. And the first part has that, you know, the that very sinister and dissonant, all these dissonant chords. And it was only after listening to the entire song that at the end I hear that there's kind of a resolution within the last couple minutes where it seems to come together and has this beautiful, relaxing sound.
Well, it's in two parts. The first part is the toccata, or the part that kind of races all over the keyboard or the brass people's lips. The second part is a fugue. And fugues, you know, Bach was, that was one of the MOs, that's what they did back then, they wrote fugues. And
what's a fugue?
Fugue is you take a particular melodic pattern and then you add it on in layers, and so you have maybe that pattern going on several different pitches at different times.
Like needlework? Patchwork?
Like messed up needlework.
It's a picture on top of a picture.
Yeah. No, it's kind of cool, though, because you've got different things going on, so it's not just homophonic, is everything moves at the same time,
right.
Creates harmonies.
Right.
This
True.
Has several, could have different melody lines moving.
Now, you wouldn't think that somebody would, and forgive my French, bastardize a song or a piece of music as splendid as this, but it did happen. 1975, a jazz R&B band covered this song and called it the album Backbone.
Boo.
How dare they?
Well, there's Switched On Bach. I can't remember which group did that, but they took all this stuff and put it into synthesizer. And that's kind of fun to listen to, actually.
Yeah. I mean, if it's done tastefully, yes. Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, this song reached number 10 in the UK charts.
Wow.
In 1980 and in 1983 in the Billboard Top 100 charts.
Is this the backbone John rendition?
No. John Williams on guitar and Tristan Fry on percussion. I don't know if you've heard of these two people.
No. I was going to say, just something popped into my brain that, and I don't even know if the show is on radio anymore. Done by Peter Schickele. He used to be Petey Kubach. He claims to be the long lost son of Bach, and he has written hysterical music because he'll take some of these rules and like he wrote the seasonings instead of the four seasons. And he's got hysterical. But anyway, he's got a
Bach to the future.
Pretty much.
But
his he plays all different styles, and his comment is, if it sounds good, it is good.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah. Well. We'll take that with a pinch of salt. And we'll move on, I would say. Now, we had a little discussion, Pam. You can't decide on one book that you're going to take to the cabin. I've allowed you to talk about three. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
The floor is yours.
Okay. Well, it's hard to say because it depends on how long I'm going to be there, how long the books are, and how hard they are, first of all. I probably will talk about books that I have read because I don't know what I'm going to read in the future yet.
Okay. Give us the titles.
Okay. Probably the most awesome book I've written. Written. I've
ooh,
read.
Well, written.
No, I have not written.
Tell us more.
No. I have read is called Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace. My daughter turned me onto that book. It's extremely cerebral.
Is it one of these books that you can't put down for you? Was it? You know?
Yeah, pretty much. And it's like over 1,000 pages, but it's intense. I mean, it is intense. I think I want to read it again because when I got done, I kind of went, huh?
Yeah.
It's graphic. It's got a lot of fantasy in it as far as future world type stuff, but not too far in the future.
Right.
It's an incredible book. The guy has been dubbed a genius. Unfortunately, he's not. He's dead now, unfortunately. But
posthumously dubbed a genius.
The author or the main character?
He was dubbed a genius before he died.
The author, you mean?
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah.
What would be your second book? What would that be?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe one of Richard Russo's books. I think I've read all there are. But if he would come out with another one, it would be greatly appreciated.
Are you listening, Richard?
Yeah, really. He's kind of a semi-local author. He's from the Gloversville area. And
What kind of genre are we talking?
It's fiction. But I think a lot of it's based on a lot of his life stories because I've also written. Here I go again. I'm writing books. I've also read his memoirs, and you can see in the books a lot of the things that came out of his own life. But they're about the common man. You can really get down and dirty with these people. You know, you can really.
Right. So is it a fantasy book or is it just raw?
No,
and real,
this is reality.
Real life.
Yeah, reality.
You know,
there's a lot of bars in it. I don't frequent bars, but I can appreciate the.
I mean, I love reading books that are real.
It's very, very real.
I read one of my favorite. I love reading Scottish fiction, and one of my favorite writers is. Alan Spence, and he writes a lot about Glasgow, the real Glasgow mm-hmm. lifestyle, mm-hmm. and you can just imagine what's happening with what he's, when you're reading it, and it just for that time I'm reading it, if I'm lying in my bed or sitting on the couch mm-hmm. in the Catskills, for that time when I'm reading that, I'm in Glasgow.
You can see the paint peeling off the wall. You know, you can see those types of things. You can see, you can feel the despair in the people as they are stomping to work or whatever they're doing. I mean, it really does capture the human condition.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
I took a grad class on the Great Depression, and one of our assignments, a paper we had to write, was of the books we had read, which best demonstrated or gave you the feel of the Great Depression. You know, what did the Great Depression feel like? And I chose a book called Little Man, What Now? By a German author named Hans Falada. And it was about the Great Depression in Germany in the 1930s. And what happens is there's this young guy, he's a tailor. He's like 18 or 19 years old. And he has a disagreement with his boss. He gets fired. He gets a girl pregnant. And it's just one thing after the other. And he just slips further and further into despair and into poverty. And there's just the feeling is there is nothing you can do no matter how hard you try mm-hmm. to get ahead. And I thought, even though it was a work of fiction, it really gave you that feeling, that some sense of helplessness that I think existed to some degree during the Great Depression. There's something about fiction that it seems to be more effective than maybe a documentary or nonfiction in helping you to feel what people are feeling.
Yeah.
Well, he's written several of these books, but again, they're sort of based around Gloversville, the glove factories that closed, the health problems that came to people because of all the contamination of the water from the tanning.
Sure.
So this is all wrapped up into these people's
lives. Yeah, it's very interesting.
I wasn't familiar with that. I didn't know Gloversville here in New York and the tanneries and stuff. The Catskills was a major tannery.
Yeah. Prattsville was I used to work in the Pratt Museum, and I know a lot about Zadok Pratt and George Pratt and the tanning industry, you know, particularly in that area. So, but we will move on. Do you want to talk quickly about another book, or are you happy with the two books that you've taken?
I think I probably would grab, if it was out in paperback, I would grab a John Grisham book, because my daughter calls them trashy books. She's into all these like really brainy type books, you know, but I like to read one because you can just read through it. So
and enjoy it. It's a simple story.
Like Jurassic Park or something like that?
Oh, that's a Michael Crichton. I've read that.
Sorry.
I like his too, but he's no longer with us. But yeah, Grisham is still writing.
He does a lot of. Is it the law? There's a lot of lawyers.
Yeah, all the law stuff. Yeah.
Did he write Wall Street? Wall Street. Am I thinking of something else?
He might have. He's written so many. I just can't remember what his latest is.
Yeah, but I know who you're talking about.
It's good. Up. Kind of a frosting, you know. There's no substance there. It's just sweet.
It's fun.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, I was an eclectic.
I'm eclectic.
Yeah, an eclectic. Mix of books there. Shall we move on to the next song?
Absolutely. Our next song is Oliver Messiaen's Dieu parmi nous, coming right up.
Thank you.
That was Olivier Messiaen de Parmigneux. Pam, I know why you chose that song, because you play the organ, but I have to say, that sounds like the air organist's dream, that song.
It sounds like what?
The air organist. You know, an air guitar player.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
The air organist's dream.
I assure you it can be played.
I don't know, it's more complicated.
Pam, tell us why you wanted to bring that song in.
It's probably one of my favorite pieces in the organ literature. It's from a suite of pieces that he wrote called The Nativity of Our Lord. And Messiaen was a spiritual person himself. He was Roman Catholic, and he really sought spirituality in all of his music. It's interesting. I mean, some of his techniques, he was also into ornithology and birds, so you'll hear some of that in his music as well. But I played that piece, and I just love the piece, and I've played it for other people, and they like it too. So.
I have to say, it sounds like, I mean, from a layman's point of view, which is my view, it sounds very, very technical. So to hear you say that you can play that sounds and is quite impressive.
Well, I used to be able to play it. I don't know if I can anymore.
I can't imagine. You see organ players going, and you know, their hands on the keyboard, and then their feet on the pedals. And I mean, I in college I took a music class. I could barely get a chord with one hand, let alone all four limbs going simultaneously.
Yeah, it's busy.
Yeah. I visited home in September, October, and I was in the Glasgow Museum with my father, and there was a massive organ there. And at 1 o'clock every day, they play this organ, and they had two television screens, one where you can watch the guy's hands and one where you can watch the guy's feet. And we just sat, and there was a big crowd, just sat and watched this guy in awe. It was just fantastic, you know. How these people, including yourself, can play the organ, and I find that to be very, very impressive.
Practice.
Now, Pam, our last song that we're going to listen to today, it's one of the three poems of Jessica Hornick. It's number one, East Hill Road.
Thank you. citrus circled house, on your canyon perch, the need for me some sides like it. At
that was Inscape, three poems by Jessica Hornick, number one, East Hill Road. That was lovely. Pam, why did you choose that?
Well, this CD is one that my daughter's chamber group, Inscape, has just made. And I love, you know, I especially love this because of the quality of that woman's voice. My daughter's actually the oboist on the CD playing. Also, the CD is up for a Grammy, so we're keeping our fingers crossed for that.
But lovely piece of music. It's excellent.
It is beautiful.
Yeah, good luck to them for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's you can be very proud of your daughter. That was beautiful.
It's a duet between the oboe and the vocalist.
Yeah, and it's amazing how the intonation matches nicely and the timbre and the quality. It's quite beautiful, I think.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, Pam, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I've really enjoyed listening to the music that you've brought and you stumbling across undecisively how many books you want to bring.
All of them.
A library to the Catskills.
A mobile library. But seriously, it's been really, really enjoyable listening to your songs and talking to you today. So, yeah, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Pam.
Thank you for having me.
One more question for you.
Okay.
It is, how do you take your coffee?
I don't drink coffee.
Oh, come on. Mike.
Okay, back when I used to drink coffee, it was black.
Andy
my kind of gal.
Yeah, no, I'm a cream and sugar guy, but I can respect it.
You know, you were talking about blasphemy earlier. That is blasphemy.
I don't know.
Flavored coffees.
Oh, I like the flavored coffees, but I don't like the cream and the sugar.
Represent Pam, thank you.
Pam, you are so close. You are so close there.
Well, Pam, thanks again. Take care and have a great spring coming up.
Hi, I'm Pam Slater. You have been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and everyone else at WGXC 90.7 FM. Thanks.